John Barkley comes up to receive the trophy. This, for the Scarlets fans, is simply great to watch. They were outplayed in the first half by a Tudor side that picked and win. The 1872 Cup back in Edinburgh hands. They've beaten Glasgow.
The first team in 17 attempts to come to Dublin and get a win. How good is that for you?
Oh, it's great.
All I'm getting at the moment are players shouting, knock on, offside, tackle out the ball. We're in the wrong sport for that.
The Zeebo special gets it wide to Earls. And Earls from here means only one thing.
Best stadium I've ever played in, the best atmosphere, the best supporters. Hopefully one day I'll be back.
Should of course apologise to any Munster fans listening. They'll have something to say about whether Leinster are going to be in the final as the Scarlets come again. Oh, brilliant offload. It's Brady with a stroll in under the sticks.
Oh, look, it's been a roller coaster here all my life. 47-10. Jesus, I thought I was in dreamland when we won the Pro 12. Phenomenal, phenomenal.
Hey guys, welcome to Outside Centres. So the weekend that was had Pro 14 clashes, but they were strange. They were the normal Pro 14 clashes that you have just before the Autumn Internationals when some sides are quite depleted. So you often get some strange results, and it's also a chance for certain teams to shine. Teams that necessarily don't lose too many players to the national squads. Yeah. So they're able to compete then on perhaps a closer level to those teams that do lose a lot of players.
Yeah, some teams had some very stern hands from RFUs around the place pulling certain players back. So you may have seen certain teams such as Scarlets or Leinster or Munster or whatever have slightly more impacted squads this week. But I think there are some squads that were kind of would have been there or thereabouts with the Pro 14, and we kind of saw some interesting results.
Yeah, well, to fixate on, well, Ospreys versus Connacht.
Yeah.
Very close game, 22-17.
Came down to the wire.
Came down to the absolute wire,
yeah.
It was 17-3 at one point, then Connacht came back 17-0. It's never easy with Connacht. I'm sure Ospreys fans will say the same.
Yeah. And then Evans scoring the try.
Yeah, and Bulgarian missed a drop goal then before as well.
Just
to make it as painful as possible for Connacht fans.
Yeah. Carty, he's getting there. He's getting there. He's improving. But, unfortunately not quite Johnny Sexton level yet.
And then, speaking of the odd results maybe that are thrown up, Zebre beat Edinburgh.
Yeah.
34-16.
Yeah. Huge. I mean, Edinburgh are definitely riding high from Toulon. And then, all of a sudden, crashing back down to earth. I mean, they're up at halftime 13-3. You imagine they kick on from there, maybe turn the screw a bit and shut out the game. But they scored 3 points in the second half, and
Zebre ran away with four tries in the second half. And your man Richard Cockrell, the coach obviously of Edinburgh, was saying beforehand he expected no drop off in intensity, just because it wasn't a European fixture, just because the national squad wasn't there.
Yeah, well, I mean, he wasn't exactly hugely boastful after the results in the European League, so I think the results.
Oh yeah, what was he saying? He was saying, "Oh, we don't expect to get through the screen."
Yeah.
Anyway, I think they
definitely would have expected to beat Zebre. So
life is great when you're quoting yourself, though. Yeah. I mean, at the same time, he's in a group with Edinburgh, Newcastle top, they're second, and you think, okay, that's an unreasonable thing for a coach to say that they don't expect to get through that.
No, but then you got down.
It's Toulon and Montpellier. Yeah. I mean, the man's feet are firmly on the ground.
Yeah,
are we ready to talk about? The big clash, Munster versus Glasgow.
Yeah, huge. I mean, because we were watching this game live, and with 14 minutes left, Munster are down 14 points. So, like, ginormous result for Munster. I mean, I don't think the Thomond crowd could have asked for a better result in terms of the atmosphere.
It's almost like the planet sometimes.
Exactly. The dramatics when it comes to last minute wins in Thomond, it's well documented.
And a controversial penalty then at the death. So
CJ Stander and think of it. Peter O'Mahony kind of doing some questionable things. Maybe Peter O'Mahony getting some assistance from Ian Keatley to stay on his feet, or maybe off his feet. Who knows?
Yeah.
Definitely something Timo definitely couldn't have said was right or wrong. But
he didn't go to Timo. They got the penalty 25-24.
And then even more so along the lines of a dramatic win at Thomond, you have Rory Scanlon take the kick from it was just over 50 metres out. I mean, at that point Carberry wasn't on the field. it was huge. It was absolutely huge, and I think it just played into the whole storyline of it all. And yeah, I think Munster were very, very happy at the end of that.
And I suppose Munster and Glasgow, big scrap to see who was actually the second best in the league. When it ends like that, 25-24 to the home team, there's no answer then as
exactly.
Who's the second best in the league. But their other rival, the other team that would fight for the title, second best in the league, Scarlett. So Scarlett's got a bit of a scare down in South Africa.
So they went down. Scarlett's last year, very strong team, have been a strong team for a few years, have had some shaky results this year. That's, I think, fair
enough. They haven't had a great start to the season, though.
No. And, so they went down, and at halftime, it was 20-15 to the Kings.
Well, it was 34-22 in 62 minutes.
Yeah.
I mean, Kings were pulling away.
Yeah.
But then fatigue showed, and then Scarlett
showed their class.
Yeah, but at the same time, at 80 minutes, Kings were on the Scarlett's try line looking to level. It was 41-34 it ended. Mm. So had they leveled, it would have been a draw for Scarlett, and a relatively embarrassing draw for Scarlett.
Yeah. I mean, at the moment, the Kings going into this weekend would have been the only South African team to win a game. But, Scarlets would definitely be anticipating that they go down and get two wins from two down in South Africa. So, yeah, I think that was a bit of a shaky start for them. I'm sure Pivik was a bit alarmed by that the halftime result and the result, well, the score 60 minutes. I think that, they did show their class. That's the reason that they're in Europe.
Well, they seem to be making it less of a holiday in social media than they were previously. I mean, I think the message has got through that if you're going down here and you're taking on this competition and you are sometimes coming within a try of drawing with a team that everybody kind of writes off.
Maybe you don't hang out with Lions in the meantime.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, or at least don't put it on social media. Don't let people know that's what you're doing.
Exactly.
And then I suppose when we talk about the rivals to second of the league, I mean, I suppose
the first.
Yeah, Leinster, our top league, went away to Italy. Tommaso Allan in the stand.
Injured.
Yeah, and as
massive
saying,
impact for the Italian squad.
Yeah, I thought looking at it that he was just being rested. But no, it turns out he's injured. So that's
massive knock-on effect,
We're going to talk about the internationals now later, and Italy-Ireland is going to be one of those. But then, and the betting spread in that particular game. And maybe the fact that Tommaso Allan is injured has a lot to do with that actually.
True.
It's quite in Leinster's favour. But to talk about the game at the weekend, 31-3 to Leinster.
Yeah. Only 12-3 at half time, though. So, I mean, it's a great sign. Leinster were able to hold to no scores in the second half. But not the quickest of starts for Leinster. And maybe this is a bit of Leinster of old kind of creeping in, where they'd settle into a game, whereas not having the fast start that they're more used to having last season and have had sometimes this season. But
speaking of Leinster of old, Rob Kearney came off injured.
And
you've got to like that little segment.
True. But then Leinster of old, in recent years, the first try was scored by Adam Byrne. So he had quite a good game.
Yeah, well, this is the thing, I suppose, about Adam Byrne. We were... studio were talking about him just before, about how he was at one point the coming thing, how he was the future once, and now how hard he had to prove himself. And they had a great game. I mean, he was he wasn't always getting the high ball, but he was
he was really going for it. And there's a certain tenacity that he's brought to his game now that he hadn't had before. So I mean, I think it was a great improvement for him.
Throwing himself into the tackles, getting up and throwing himself into the next one. No, he had a great game.
Living with Josh is clearly rubbing off on him.
And I suppose when you look at that and you see that this former up-and-coming star who's now fighting so hard for his place, you think to yourself, Jesus, what's that about? And then, as you were saying, Rob Kearney came off injured, a concern for Ireland. But then another guy came on, Conor O'Brien.
Out of nowhere,
we've never heard of. No. And he scored a try, of course.
Yeah.
And this is the type of guy who Adam Byrne is now competing with.
So exactly.
It sort of explains it all.
And I think it's definitely the case that because of the conveyor belt of talent that's being produced in Leinster, I mean, it was only 2 seasons ago, was it, that we were hearing about this young buck coming out of nowhere called Gary Ringrose, and now he's a staple in the Irish team. So, I mean, for Adam Byrne, the like, to be coming through Leinster, you really need to be consistently proving yourself, and it's such a... if ever there was a dog-eat-dog world in the rugby atmosphere in Ireland,
it's the Leinster Academy.
There's always someone biting
heels. Probably is Leinster Academy, actually. There's always a lot of politics going on there between the guys.
So, But a bit worrying with Conor, with Rob Kearney. but I mean, I think it's a recoverable position that we do have Jordan Armour.
Well, I mean, you have to have a plan B at this point. He's getting old. I mean, if we don't have a plan B now, when will there ever be a plan B?
Exactly.
A couple of comments about the other results. So Cheetahs hosted Blues. First win by Cheetahs so far this season, which is maybe a surprise. They were a stronger team.
South African team, last year. I think coming out of the gates, they had 3 tries in the first half. That was it for them, though. But halftime score is 21-3, and then the full-time score is 21-10. So, I mean, against a Cardiff team that have shown like spurts of energy so far this season. I mean, they had a solid win against Lyon in the European Cup, so it's definitely...
I don't think they'd be overly concerned about that. I mean, Cheetahs, I mean, as we said, were one of the stronger sides last year, and they have home advantage approaching their summer. You've got to imagine that Blues will be fine with that. They would have at least liked to get a point. They didn't. It's not the end of the world. Their European form has them elated, I'd imagine, at this point anyway.
And talking about European form, so the other game then that was on last weekend was Ulster versus Dragons. Ulster are asserting their dominance again. They kind of bought. They'd had a fantastic first game in the European Cup against Leicester.
Fantastic start to the Pro 14 season as well.
Yeah, but they had hit a bit of a dry patch. I mean, they hadn't. It's the first win in 4 games for them. So in the Pro 14, so I think they're very happy to kind of right the ship on that one. So they're very happy. Positive performance. I mean, 24-13 for half time, and then 36-18. Full-time score against the Dragons. I mean, I think Ravenhill would have been Kingsman.
Yeah, no, I was looking at the game. They're not in bad nick considering the fact that they're losing these players to international duty. I mean, just the sequence of tries: Henry Spite, then Will Allison's been called up to Ireland. Yeah. Michael Airey, the new coming thing as far as Ulster's concerned, not as far as the Ireland setup is concerned, and then Stuart McCloskey, who's obviously an Irish cap player as well. So they're not looking in very bad nick, actually, despite losing those players.
And as I said last season, I said at the beginning of this when we started this podcast. Ulster are a very good team. They're missing a few pieces. Obviously, there's a lot of stuff going on there last season. But I'm a Leskis fan. Don't think he should have gone. And I think, McFarlane's going to be doing a good job with everyone on board there.
Yeah, okay. So we'll move on then to talk about these internationals that were the theme, I suppose, of the Pro 14. So just look at the spread now that the bookies have.
Yeah.
So they've got Japan, New Zealand, -35, obviously, to New Zealand. Chances are New Zealand will make that spread against Japan. Japan will have a lot to prove at home with the World Cup coming, though, as well.
Yeah, but in typical New Zealand fashion, they can put out a C-side squad, and because there is such competition, like with Leinster, it's definitely the case that every single player is playing for every single minute that they're on the pitch, so I think they will cover that spread.
Okay.
Literally, they've been talking about how there's a A, B and C squad for the All Blacks, and, I mean, they've proved that in the Rugby Championship. They've had some pretty experimental sides out there.
The Japanese are a gambling culture. You got to think the way, like in any kind of rugby game, you wonder why the crowd goes so nuts at certain points because your team, let's say Munster, Leinster, are winning by 15. You're like, well, why are you going so nuts demanding that they score that extra try? Because you're trying to beat the spread. And I would have thought the Japanese crowd, if the spread is -35, they could think to themselves they could cheer their team into beating that spread, into losing by 30 points. I mean, when it comes down to it, I don't know. Watch that space, I'm saying. It'll be a very exciting last few minutes if New Zealand
are out of betting reasons. Watch it for betting reasons. Okay.
And then the other, Wales, Scotland. So Wales are at home and have a spread of -6, I think we were saying earlier.
The home advantage is going to be obviously included. So that will give you, if you're Wales, probably going to give you at least 3. And then with Scotland, they didn't have an excessively taxing summer tour, and Stuart Hogg is, I think, either just coming back from injury or is he going to be out for these games. So, I mean, I think -6 is perfectly reasonable. I think Wales beat that spread.
Yeah, well, I was just reading some of the British coverage of it, and they were saying that they're just dismissing it as a money game. It's just I mean, and I suppose so it would be. I mean, Wales playing Scotland. I mean, our Scottish or Welsh people didn't particularly excited about that particular encounter with outside the Six Nations.
This being a November international, you rarely see Six Nations games, Six Nations type fixtures being played in the November internationals. So I think this is essentially a warm game. I think neither of them taking it too seriously.
It's a disappointment of a fixture. But then the other one that they were saying, just the money game, is obviously the game in Chicago between Ireland and Italy.
Yeah.
And the spread there for Ireland is 27. Now, I think that's a highly excessive spread. I think that any Irish player who's playing, who's been called up, wants to be picked, again, of any quality, wants to be picked for the New Zealand game. And even if they stub their toe, they're going to have to come off. I don't believe that Ireland will get anywhere near the 27th spread.
See, this is the thing. I have to disagree with that point of view, because I just think that Ireland, if... And realistically...
But the bookies disagree with me too, and they're usually right, so I mean...
Well, I mean, so if you look at it, the Irish squad that's there, so like looking at the squad that they're bringing over, they had a 26-man squad that they announced, they're now in America. I think that the squad itself is enough, that there's enough players being rested and being left in Ireland, that all these players are going to want to prove their point. I mean, there's going to be a definite competition between Ross Byrne and Joey Carby as to who's going to be on the bench behind Sexton. I mean, Joey has the versatility obviously there, but I mean, we don't know who's going to be starting yet. Against Italy, you're going to have to bring over
it's true. Behind the minus 27 spread, you see a rugby nerd's dream as well, in terms of
all these players are going to be
pre-workout
dying politics. For their spot. They're going to be dying for their spot.
It's
their opportunity, so it'll be interesting to see.
And the segue isn't coming to me there, unfortunately. Speaking of the internationals, well, is England South Africa? And I was kind of trying to get it. Speaking of hype, as you were hyping up Ireland, speaking of hype, England versus South Africa, the English obviously want to hype up their own team as much as they can. I mean, they themselves are aware that that's difficult to do right now.
Exactly.
But then also they want to
they want
to spark a few points off the Southern Hemisphere sides.
Yeah.
And even though they won't be playing Australia, I mean, Australia seemed like a target for the media network.
Yeah,
they are.
They're playing England and Australia are playing the last game of Australia's tour and England's tour on the 24th of November.
All right.
So there's plenty of time to go yet, and England are not going to be focusing on that game. They're going to be focusing on New Zealand, realistically. But for now, they're going to be playing South Africa in the first game.
The point I suppose I was making sort of more broadly there is that they weren't taking a shot against South Africa. They're just taking a shot against the other hemisphere generally.
Yeah, I mean they're playing
they go through them one by one. Well, you need to generate a bit of interest and excitement.
So
they've started calling the Wallabies the Wobblies.
Yeah.
Because they've gone through a period of bad form. They just lost there to New Zealand again.
I mean, New Zealand have gone 3-0 against Australia in the Bledisloe Cup. I mean, even the fact that they put the final game on in Japan, I think they kind of knew that they were going to win in the second test. So, yeah. I mean, Australia, it was a tough series that Ireland had against
Australia don't actually beat New Zealand. I mean, that's kind of the interesting thing, is that when you look back, they beat them last year as a dead rubber at the end of
the cup was already decided.
Exactly, yeah. New Zealand had beaten them twice already. And when you actually look back, they had a draw in 2014, but they actually haven't beaten them when it matters since 2010.
Yeah.
So their record actually is always relatively up and down. It's never been of a standard where it could beat New Zealand. So are we able to, I suppose, extract from the fact that it's now being beaten quite well by New Zealand that they're necessarily doing hugely badly? We know that in Australian media, Michael Cech is reported as trying to inspire more faith in the squad, and you've got pictures of David Pocock looking very, very sad.
He always looks upset.
The world isn't perfect. Yeah. He has to fight for the world to be perfect, and he'll smile when the world is perfect. But on England's side, as much as they're finding it difficult to hype themselves up, and it kind of hit ludicrous extremes there today. They've lost already Chris Robshaw, Joe Launchbury, Billy McAvinopola, and then it turns out they lost Courtney Laws because he slept, 6'7", he slept in the wrong size bed in a hotel. His back is out of joint. He's actually not able to play.
Tall man problems. I mean, it's a serious thing. But, I mean, if England are winning and losing a game because of Courtney Laws,
what they need is a bit of Team Sky thinking, basically.
Yeah.
Some David Brails for Team Sky thinking, where they believe if you add that extra little mile, like hoovering a hotel, as soon as you arrive, you'll get less germs, you'll get less sick. So if you go into a hotel and measure a bed before a 6'7" rugby player gets
every inch,
it's marginal gains. It's the war of marginal gains.
Exactly.
And that's what English rugby could learn from English cycling. Measure your bed.
No, but it's just, I mean, they're probably just going to try and find someone else from the Southern Hemisphere that has an English passport and then hope for the best, you know?
What do you think about this idea that, I mean, I know when he arrived for the Wasps game, he was booed.
Oh, Eddie Jones.
Eddie Jones. But what I think about the idea that a few comments before the summer were that, oh, if the Ottawa Internationals don't go well, that's the end of him. That's what a lot of people were saying to the RFU. And you think to yourself, yeah, well, what kind of situation does that leave them? Is it okay to sack your manager?
It's too late already.
Less than a year before the World
it's
Cup.
It's too late already. They should have done it after the November, after the summer series. I mean, the only match that they won against South Africa during the summer was one that the South Africans didn't care about. Because the series was over. The series was
Yeah, well, they had their losing streak of six games, and then it was hugely...
No, it was six tests in seven games, because they lost the Barbarians as well.
Oh, true. Of course, those Barbarians. Yeah. Well, so, I mean, like, yeah.
But how Eddie Jones still had his job. I mean, I think Stuart Lancaster had like, lynch mobs after him. Like, so it was ridiculous.
Well, the English media, made a big deal of it at the time, that, my God, they're going to show such English pride on the pitch. This is a test they have to win. And then they probably went out and won a game that they'd hyped up so much that was pointless to South Africans.
It
was
everyone else was watching the Soccer World Cup, and then they're so on an elation that England were doing so well, they just confused it that it wasn't the rugby team. So all of a sudden then they won one game at the end of it, and they're like, oh, it's all fine.
Yeah, well, having had a go there at the English, it's probably only fair to have a go then at the Irish. And the English the English media as well are trying to poke at New Zealand by talking about the idea that Ireland could become world number one. You hear from Irish people a lot that Ireland could become world number one at the end of this series, which leads to one question, which is, how did the maths of that work out? And second question, who cares?
Yeah. Well, I think mathematically, because of the way the world rankings work, the home team will automatically get... So this is why this match is supremely important in terms of world rankings, because the home team will automatically get a couple of points... bump on. So the way the world rankings are, New Zealand are like 92.3 points and Ireland are 89.1 or something along those lines. So Ireland will get a 2-point bonus because they're playing at home or something along those lines, and as a result this game is basically two teams.
I don't like the way you say that.
Points.
It's not a 2-point bonus, it's like a handicap. They're scored less by virtue of being at home.
Well, no,
it's harder for them
their
to
total,
move up.
Their total points in the rankings, it's going to be higher.
Yeah.
So as a result, they would be equivalent on the same amount of points that New Zealand are in terms of where if every team played Ireland at home, then Ireland would be ranked the same as New Zealand is when in New Zealand play away.
Right, okay. But still at the same time, in terms of, I appreciate I introduced this as a let's laugh about Ireland and now I'm getting deep into it.
But, no,
but how don't New Zealand need to lose to another team for it to be mathematically possible?
For Ireland to go first overall, yes. But
so they'd need to lose to to Japan where the spread is minus 35.
Oh, that would be huge. I mean, I think Ireland wouldn't even need to do anything else after that. It would be massive.
The amount of points they'd lose anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, I get you.
But this is why the Ireland-New Zealand game is so important. Because if Ireland were to win, they have the potential to... If other things go Ireland's way, maybe Ireland will go number one, but Ireland gets to close the gap to within a hair's breadth of it. But if New Zealand win, New Zealand get that buffer back. New Zealand gets to be that untouchable number one again.
So the idea of getting nerdish about who's world number one, and it is kind of nerdish, isn't it? Because the seedings for the World Cup have been done, so that actually
it's just
bragging rights. But at the same time, it says the other side of the hype coin of Ireland could go number one is that New Zealand could come to Ireland, defend their world number one position, become unassailable as world number one, which is, I'm sure,
very much in their mind. I mean,
likely outcome.
Well, I mean, that's why they had the squad that they had out against Australia. I think maybe they are resting one or two players, like Ireland resting some players as well. But,
and there's more Pro 14 next week.
There is more Pro 14. And then this is where it's going to get interesting, because some of the players that will obviously be away on international duty, and even some that are away on international duty but not playing, won't be in the teams for this week's games. So, I mean, some of the key games that could potentially have throw up some interesting results. You have Ulster playing Treviso in Treviso. Ulster now are going to be kind of adjusting to the fact that a lot of their players are going to be taken away because of the Ireland squad.
Mm.
So that's going to be...
Treviso didn't handle it very well this weekend either, but... Yeah.
True. But I think that could offer some interesting results. Who else would you have? Connacht versus Dragons, I think both those squads mostly will be untouched.
Connacht really need to win that.
Yeah, Connacht, yeah. If they're going to be any serious contenders, they're going to need to win it. Leinster and Munster are both going down to South Africa. So Leinster are playing Kings this weekend and Munster are playing Cheetahs. Munster Cheetahs could be an interesting game. Munster, if they want to show their worth, should probably win that game. I think that'll be an interesting one.
And it'll be a big test for the idea that they're not using social media when they get out of South Africa anymore, because I suppose with Leinster and Munster, some of the bigger social media stars on their way.
Exactly. James Lowe's going to be all over that. And then, so some of the, just to clean this up, the other games we have, so Ospreys versus Glasgow. Ian Ospreys, potentially interesting. Some players will be away from Glasgow for the Scottish side.
Ospreys would fancy they could win that. Yeah.
They'd be probably targeting that game as one of the ones that they could take away from Glasgow. Edinburgh versus Scarlets in Edinburgh.
Ditto, yeah.
Yep, same again, but in reverse. So it'll be the Scottish side looking to take some points away. And then the final game of the next round will be Cardiff versus Zebre in Cardiff. So I think
Cardiff will win that. Yeah. Well, Cardiff will win that, or people will lose their jobs.
Exactly. It'll be interesting to see if Gareth Anscombe is away or not. With the Welsh squad. I mean, how many teams can you bring?
Also, to give the other side, I mean, having beaten them at home, to beat them again away, it would be great for Zebre.
But the problem is now for Zebre that Carlos Cana, so their out half, is actually going to be starting for the Italian team. So when
Tomás Wallen's
injured. Yeah. So, and then even for Treviso, Ian McKinley, quite an Irish sounding name for an Italian international, but he's going to be away as well. So it's going to throw some interesting results up, I think, this weekend, and plenty of rugby to watch, and plenty to fill your time with. So yeah, I think that's it for this week, guys.
Yep.
Cool. Talk to you next week. Bye.
John Barkley comes up to receive the trophy. This for the Scarlets fans is simply great to watch. They were outplayed in the first half by a Cheetahs side that picked and win. The 1872 Cup back in Edinburgh hands. They've beaten Glasgow.
The first team in 17 attempts to come to Dublin and get a win. How good is that for you?
Oh, it's great.
All I'm getting at the moment are players shouting, knock on, offside, tackle without the ball. We're in the wrong sport for that.
The Zeebo special gets it wide to Earls. And Earls from here means only one thing.
Best stadium I've ever played in, the best atmosphere, the best supporters. Hopefully one day I'll be back.
Should of course apologise to any Munster fans listening. They'll have something to say about whether Leinster are going to be in the final as the Scarlets come again. Oh, brilliant offload. It's Brady with a stroll in under the sticks.
Oh, look, it's been a roller coaster here all my life. 47-10. Jesus, I thought I was in dreamland when we won the Pro 12. Phenomenal.